Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. I am confused. I don't know what we just watched. We just watched Chicago versus Connecticut. Kind of look up, and you would think the sky, it's always there, but I think the sun's up. Wow. Even though it's nighttime. Nikias, man, how are you doing, man?
I am doing pretty well. We are recording on a Thursday night, so happy 2K Eve. By the time the listeners get to this, it will be 2K Day, so have some fun, folks.
There you go. I see you. Shout them out. We should also shout out Nikias Duncan. Changed the Santa hat up. Now I got a picture with Doris Burke. I see you, big dog.
Oh, man. Felt like, you know, we were reaching fall and I'd normally have another picture by then. I was like, you know what? I do have this in the camera roll from the Eastern Conference Finals. Might as well do that for a couple months until we hit December again and it's back to the Santa hat. But
I was about to say, you got like 2 months, brother.
Yeah, we got 2 months. We got there.
Okay, speaking of 2K Day, how quickly are you going to start ranting about ratings?
Right now, actually.
Nope. So the sun sky. Let's get right back to it. Let's circle back to that.
Oh, put some respect on the defense of Herb Jones. Anyway, the Connecticut Sun beating the Chicago Sky in a game 5. Winning by 9, like, transparently, I had the Sky winning this series. I had them win the series in 4. I had them win the game 5. The Sun beating the Sky isn't a surprise to me. This is a talented group. The fashion in which the Connecticut Sun were able to pull off this win, including an 18-0 run over the last 4 minutes and 46 seconds of this basketball game, I did not have that on the bingo card at all.
No one did. This was surprising. The Chicago Sky scored 5 points in the fourth quarter. The Chicago Sky were firmly in control of this game. It was 63-54 with 4 minutes and 46 seconds left. This thing was cooked. The Sun had scored 8 points in the third quarter.
Yeah.
A grand total of 8. And guess how many they had in the quarter up to this point that I just mentioned?
55.
A grand total of 6. I don't know what we just watched. I don't know what just happened because it's not like the Suns' process was great in that fourth quarter. We were watching it. I didn't know what they were trying to do. I didn't know what they were running. They had a great game plan to start the game. Oh, yeah, we have Jonquel Jones. Let's do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you guys want to start the little empty corner pick and roll? You guys want to pre-rotate to the Jonquel Jones pop? Fine. The cutting stuff you guys did, we'll do it too. We'll knock down some shots. We'll play with purpose. That third quarter, complete opposite. Purpose was gone. Pace was gone. Tempo was gone. It just didn't seem like they had much behind what they're trying to do. The Sky defense, you can't just do a dribble handoff and play out of it. You have to attack them and keep it moving and keep the pressure on them. The transition buckets that the Sun got in the first half, gone. The Sky's transition defense was excellent in the second half up until the point of chaos in which the Sun gutted this one out and just took it. Like, it literally, everyone makes the analogy, hey, you leave the door open, leave the door cracked, never what's going to happen. No, I left the door cracked. Sun walked right in, took all your stuff, left. Left you a note. What did it say on the Bird app? You take the ball, we'll take the series.
Yeah, what a tweet from the Connecticut Sun official account with the video of Kalia Copper holding the ball. Wow. And just to bounce off your point about Connecticut's process, like, it wasn't great. Like, it in the second half of it, in that fourth quarter in particular, we were talking about it during the watch party. It's like, hey, you just ran an empty corner pick and roll with Jonquel Jones. She short rolls. It's a mid-range jumper. She splashes it in. Next possession, you go empty corner pick and roll on the other side with Alyssa Thomas as a screener and Candace Parker is involved, and a pass is tried to thread the pass through, it's a turnover. It's like, wait, you just did a good thing involving your best player, your most dangerous offensive weapon. Like, Chicago has been hedging pretty consistently. Like, attack the hedge when Emma Mieseman's involved. And she's been good at it. So not even that. Like, it's Chicago. Their defense is really good, contrary to the belief of the voters, I guess. But whatever. Chicago's defense is really good. So it's not slander for Emma Mieseman. But it's like, hey, do we want to face the good hedge defender that involves Jonquel Jones? Or do we want to face arguably the best hedge defender in basketball, like Candace Parker? And the fruit of that is a short roll with Alyssa Thomas, who's also good, but like, Chicago's okay with her taking shots. Let's reverse this a little bit. So there's a little bit of that, but man, they just made the plays. As confused as I was by Connecticut's process through parts of that fourth quarter, I was even more flummoxed by what Chicago was trying to do. Or better phrased, I don't know what they were trying to do. And then once it got tight and the run went from 8-0 run to 12-0 run to 14-0 run, and then it started to become a pressing situation for Chicago. It's like, oh, they just don't have it. And I think you zoom out, you look at the Chicago team, like, they've been tremendous all year long. And they've been able to find a way. If you shut down their initial offensive action, they will cut out of it. They will hand off out of it. They will do something random. They'll be able to generate some stuff. And I think some of that kind of shielded the fact that, like, they didn't have like a top three, top five level bucket getter on their roster. They don't have that. And I think you really start to feel that as Connecticut locked in defensively and took away some of the randomness in their half court. Once we got late in the clock and it's okay, Candace, as great as you are, create against Alyssa Thomas. Emma, as great as you are, do this against Jonquel Jones. Kalia Copper, as great as you are, attack the basket against a set defense. The flow was gone, and then they didn't have that one-on-one counter either. And to Connecticut's credit, one, they just locked in defensively. But two, the process was uneven, but they were able to find enough. They were able to make enough big plays. Well, we talked about the 18-0 run to close it out in 4:46. If you zoom in a little bit to about 3.5 minute mark, the DeWanna Bonner bucket that really kicked off things, gets the and one. Her and Kalia Copper kind of mix it up. There's question of, hey, is there going to be a tech here? It shouldn't have been, and it wasn't, thank goodness, because that would have been weak if it was. But they just found enough little plays like that. And I am wildly impressed as someone that has questioned the Sun being able to break through in tough spots. I find myself very impressed. I was wrong on the series. And they came through huge in the last two games. Back was against the wall in the game four. They punched Chicago in the mouth. You come into Chicago, things go haywire in the quarter before. Again, 8-point quarter, as you mentioned. And they rallied together. Another thing I had a question about: can they rally? Would they be able to pull things together in tight spots? And they did it. It's an impressive win and also just a shocking and confusing loss for the Sky team.
Well, I mean, the timing of the Sky's offensive drought was bad. I think it was more so just about this particular game. I don't know how many of these Sky players felt that had it going in this one. Allie Quigley couldn't hit any shots. Courtney Vandersloot was aggressive, but 3 assists to let you know exactly where the Suns' defense was at mindset-wise. Candace Parker didn't have it going. Mieseman made a couple. I think if you go back and zoom backwards towards that game, I'm trying to rewind in my head, they had a chance to extend the lead. Because when you're up that much, all you need is one bucket. But I remember Allie Quigley had a quick shot off a pin down. Not a lot of pressure put on the Suns' defense. I think they had good movement. Vandersloot misses a three as well. I think Copper missed a layup drive. But by that time, the game's tied. Mm-hmm. So it's a handful of possessions that makes a difference. And when you come up empty on those and the other team is pushing on the other end, getting to the line, finishing, keeping pressure on you, it's tough, you know? the Sun made big plays. They made plays out of nothing to keep the pressure on the Sky. And the Sky didn't quite have the answer at the worst possible time. And this is sometimes something that happens when you have a big lead. You get caught. You get caught. And now you were just out there playing and you're moving. Hey, let's get through it. Let's finish. And now you're in a whole different ball game real quick. And I credit the Sun for that. The Sky had offensive issues the whole series, which was the one hope that the Sun had. Hey, we've got them in the mud, and they kept them there. And if you look at it, the Sun, 27 made field goals, 25 assists tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So while it may have been nasty and gross and messy, they made the most out of the meal they had in the pantry.
That's good stuff. That is good work there. Ah, man. You were a little bit earlier rattling off like what the Sky players got, just their contributions in this one. And then you look on the Connecticut side, and it's, again, wasn't always pretty, but they got balance. 15-10 for Jonquel Jones, 12-10-8 for Alyssa Thomas, 15-9-5 for DeWanna Bonner, 12-6-5 for Courtney Williams, who broke the streak. Mentioned on the last podcast, this was the first time since 2017 that she had four straight games scoring in single digits. Double digits in game four, double digits again in game five, including some huge shots being made.
I mean, that's the tough thing with a shot maker in the playoffs. Yeah, we can talk about the struggles that they have, but ultimately, they can get loose. It doesn't take much for them to get loose. Mm-hmm. So Courtney Williams, 6-for-9 doesn't feel like a lot, but some of her makes were loud. They were big. They were needed. And it's hard. It's hard. It's hard as heck when you're going against a score, not even of the highest magnitude, but just the ability, because they can throw your scheme over the top rope. You mm-hmm. do everything well for 20 seconds. Two dribbles later, 2 points later. And you mix that in with what everything else the Sun does, offensive rebounding wise, tempo wise, pace wise. Those are backbreakers. When you're defending your tail off. So you got to give credit. I mean, these are two teams who knew who they were, know who they are. The Sun it really, honest to God, looked like they would not get out of their own way. They were completely in their way, and the Sky were keeping them there. And you look up, and they are headed to the finals.
They just couldn't convert off of the Sun mistakes. I was going through the box score of this one as we prepare for the pod, and I was surprised. The Sun had 23 turnovers in this game. The Sky won the turnover battle by 10 in this basketball game. That is extreme. That's a difficult thing to do. The Sun were able to balance that somewhat with the rebounding disparity, but the Sun gave away possessions, and the Sky just could not. It was shocking. It got to a point where I'm just like, okay, this doesn't even look like the same Sky team. Because it's one thing, again, to run good stuff. I mean, the Sun are also a good defense. But it's one thing to run good stuff and the shots just don't fall. It's unfortunate, but it happens. To see some of the listless possessions from Chicago in the half court, where you could actively see them searching for, okay, wait, what is our pressure point? What can we do? What are we doing to generate a good look, regardless of if it goes in? They just couldn't find anything easy to close out this game. And that's concerning, man. And now, obviously, the Sky are eliminated now, but going bigger picture, I have no idea what this team is going to look like heading into next season.
I've been trying to say the quiet part out loud for a while. I thought this was the last rodeo for the Sky. Don't necessarily have the exact reasoning, but it took a lot for them to come back. And I don't think we're going to see this version again, which is sad in a way, because they were incredible during the regular season. Incredible stuff. An entire season of offense, defense, multiple efforts all over the place. And that's the result. You know, it's tough being at the top. And it's tough when you have to, like I joked, the Sky are probably going to win by figuring it out all year long. But when you got to figure it out a lot, it gets hard. It's hard to grind that way through a season. It's draining. because every game means so much. Every game is a battle. Every game is something you're having to deal with. So yeah, it's a lot to process at the current moment, but
it is like we are recording this basically 10 minutes after the game finished. That's when we started this. But I'm glad you touched on that. It is sad for the Sky for it to end this way. Last year, they were a 500 club, getting a lot of flux with the roster and trying to figure things out. And then they hit their stride in the postseason. And they followed that up with, as you mentioned, like took a minute to get everyone. Even the Emma Mieseman signing was a little bit late in the process. Like, wait a minute. I didn't know that was going to be. I didn't know that was going to be the splash. I didn't even know that was possible. But they do that. They go 26-10. I think fourth ranked defense. They were top four offense as well. And it was beautiful game stuff for large swaths of the season. Again, the cuts, the off-ball movement was tremendous. And it felt like just about everyone, they had so many fun stories this year too. Candace just being as good as she was, period. And I am still peeved that she did not make an all-defensive team this year. But her having the season that she had at this stage of her career, incredible. Kalia Copper taking the lead, particularly in the second half of the season, making an all-star team. Rebecca Gardner, we talked about her all year long. And broadcast made sure you knew she was a 32-year-old rookie. But her defense, the energy she brought, the impact she had offensively as a driver, it was just so, Azaray was so good this year. And if Breonna Jones didn't exist, Azaray Stevens is your sixth player of the year this year. She was that good. She should be starting. And she just may. Because again, this team can look very different. Five unrestricted free agents for the Chicago Sky. And those five unrestricted free agents are Candace Parker, who kind of hinted before the season that this may be her last run. Hadn't gotten official word on that yet. And I guess we're going to be tracking that because I am not ready for a world in which Candace Parker isn't playing basketball anymore. But at any rate, Candace Parker, unrestricted. Courtney Vandersloot, unrestricted. Emma Mieseman, the big splash over the last offseason. That was a one-year deal. Unrestricted. Azaray Stevens, unrestricted. Allie Quigley, unrestricted. Like, this just could be it. Like, Candace could be done, period. And from there, like, I don't know how you work out the cap gymnastics to bring everyone else back. Even if you want to. Like, part of James Wade winning Executive of the Year is fitting everyone into the salary cap this year. And that's what made the Rebecca Gardner signing so special. She didn't get a big deal, and she made a big impact off the bench. This is such a blow. And again, like the Sun beating the Sky in a game five, I wouldn't have predicted it. I didn't predict it, but it wouldn't have surprised me because the Sun are good. But closing it out 18-0 over the last 4:46, the Sky looking confused on the offensive end of the floor. And even if you zoom out, like again, they got punched in the game four. And it wasn't a great game for Candace Parker. And Steve, you even wondered like towards the end of game four, game well out of hand, Candace Parker checks back in the fourth quarter. And you actually wonder, like, did James Wade just put her back in just to upset her heading into the game five? Like, is that what that is? And Candace didn't have a great game five either. And I'm just like, it wasn't from a lack of effort, but it was just odd to see like how she started the series, where she darn near put up a 5-by-5 in the game one of the series, and for it to end the way that it did for her. Like, I just to echo what I said at the top, I didn't have it on my bingo card. And the way that Candace closed out the series in particular is even more reason for me to not want her to be gone. Like, I can't see her walking away. I can't see her walking away with her closing the series like this. Like, I don't see her going out on this kind of note.
I don't think the silence home crowd, that run, I don't think that will end it. I don't think that's the ending she would choose. It'd be my only thing. So maybe they do run it back based on how it ended, but it's tough.
Wow, man. What a season for the Chicago Sky. A bummer for them to end this way. And again, simultaneously, this is one heck of a win for the Connecticut Sun, and for them to push through and rally together and knock out the defending champs in their house.
Well, no, I mean, this is what we expected from the top four teams in the W. This was the fun of watching this season in the W. Mm-hmm. You could have picked any of the top four or five teams out of a hat, and a finals run wouldn't have been surprising. And we saw the competitive nature in these semifinals between these teams. Think the Storm aren't looking and being like, we were this close? There's someone who works for the Storm right now who's saying we should have won the series. We should have won 3-1. Mm-hmm. And they're going to carry that to the grave. I know it. Trust me. I still think the Grizzlies-Spurs conference finals was close, even though we got swept. It's life. It's fun stuff.
Tough stuff, but fun stuff indeed. While we're on the Aces, we can transition. They were able to knock out the Seattle Storm with the 97-92 victory to close that series out in four. Actually, before even digging into that game and getting into lasting thoughts of that series, a quick shout out to Asia Wilson, who was named MVP for the second time of her young career. In fact, becoming the first player in WNBA history to win multiple MVPs at age 25 or younger. First player since Lauren Jackson in 2007 to win MVP and Defensive Player of the Year in the same season. She has been incredible. She was great in that game four to close things out. Chelsea Gray. What is left to say about Chelsea Gray at this point? This is one of the most insane shot-making runs I've ever seen. Period, point blank, WNBA, college runs, it does not matter. It's been patently insane stuff. 31-10 for her in the game four, which was the first 30-10 assist game in WNBA playoff history. Big plays from Jackie Young. Welcome. Huge game for her.
Wait, did you just steamroll past the MVP thing? I thought you had like mad award takes.
Mad award takes, but it's just, there's so much going on right now. I'm still flustered from Sun Sky, honestly. let me circle back to the Asia MVP thing. One, she won 31 of the 56 first place votes. Breonna Stewart got 23, which left two votes. Candace Parker got one. Chelsea Gray got another, which, again, insane shot-making run during this postseason. This is a regular season award. I can't say I understand Chelsea getting the MVP vote. The actual top five was Asia Wilson. Breonna Stewart finished second, 32 points behind Asia Wilson. Kelsey Plum was third. Hashtag MV Plum. Shout out to Steve. Alyssa Thomas was fourth. Candace Parker was fifth. So one for you, like, were there any surprise with how the vote landed?
Not really the top two. I mean, you figured it would be tight like that. So no surprise there. I was a little surprised AT finished over Candace Parker. I was not surprised by the top three because I told you on this very podcast that's how it would work. But you know the vibes.
Just be talking. I respect.
Just be out here rambling.
And so actually on the Sky front, four different players from the Sky receive an MVP vote or just a top five vote, which is interesting considering none of them made an all defensive team, which is still very confusing for Candace. By the time this podcast is released, the all W teams should be released, if not mistaken. So I can't wait to see how that went. The all W teams are positionless this year, so that should be fun.
I can't wait for you to get mad about that.
Oh, I'm absolutely going to be upset. But, you know, we'll save that for the next podcast episode. Now going back to the game four. Ridiculous shot making for Chelsea Gray. Great two-way play from Asia Wilson. Huge game for Jackie Young, who made some crucial plays on both ends of the floor. Kelsey Plum got things started, set the tone with 10 points early. Breonna Stewart tied Angel McCautry's playoff record with a 42-point game, and it just didn't look like she was going to miss at all. Third to game four. It did not matter who defended her. It did not matter what coverage the Aces threw at her. It didn't matter how contested her shots were. She gave any and everyone buckets. And while we're on the shot-making kick, like, that was one of the most impressive shot-making performances I've seen, too. Like, it's... What a series that was.
First of all, what a series. Secondly, you can't top the shot-making. She ended that series. She ended that series. She kept the aces around, then she ended it. It was 87-87, and Chelsea Gray said, nope, no more. The buck stops here. Two dribble, pull up, pump fake, one dribble, step back, fade away, however you want it. She was ready to give it to you. And she did that all series. You know, we taught the X's and O's. We taught the differences. We taught the styles of both teams. There was never an answer for Chelsea Gray. And she was the eraser in that series. Whatever you thought was going to be the equation, go ahead and cross it out. Go ahead, flip to the back of the back. Go to the back of the math book. That's not the answer. It's just picture Chelsea Gray back there if you're Seattle. Gabby Williams was defending her tail off. Try to make the adjustment. Let me deny you more off ball. Let's try and throw some full court pressure at you. Let's do anything that we could do. And nope, buckets.
I like that adjustment from Seattle. Like, obviously didn't work ultimately since the Aces were still able to win, but it was a smart gambit because the Aces, again, we've talked about this. The shot making has been there, particularly from Chelsea Gray, but like the process in the half court hasn't always been great. And so if you're the Storm, who, there isn't a great scheme answer for Chelsea Gray. You switch, she abuses it. You play drop, she can manipulate and get to her spots. If you blitz, she's able to pass out of that. And we talked about that a little bit in the game three, where it's like, hey, wait, why are y'all trapping all of a sudden? Why are you opening up roles? Why are you opening up things for the Aces in the half court? And so they just got to the point where it's like, all right, bet, we're just going to press. Gabby pressed Chelsea Gray. And our bet is that Chelsea's going to break it because you're not stripping Chelsea Gray. But if it takes them 6 seconds to get past half court and then another 4 or 5 seconds to set up whatever they want to run, more than half the clock is gone. And if we're able to blow that up with our switching, if we're able to scram out of that, if they get a mismatch or just throw different looks at them, okay, now it's 6 on the clock. And if we can just keep the aces here, like the shot making is great, but like this is our pathway. Muddy the waters on that end and then let Breonna Stewart and Jewel Loyd bring us home on the other end. And the template was a pretty strong one until it wasn't. Breonna Stewart was 42, which, again, insane. Jewel Loyd with 29. Their 71 combined points was a playoff teammate record. And it just what they just didn't get enough from the others. And also Chelsea Gray just said, I don't really care anymore.
And I mean, not just Chelsea Gray. Jackie Young hits some big shots in that game, too. Like we mentioned before, they never had an answer for Chelsea, never had an answer for Asia. And so any of the actions involving one of those players would just cause just a little wrinkle. I go back to Chelsea Gray hitting the pull-up three. They put Sue Bird in action. Storm went with a squeeze and under strategy, which is good. If you don't want to show, you don't want to go with the pop, you want to try and get back to Chelsea Gray. Chelsea just stopped and popped immediately.
Mm-hmm. It's like, oh.
The hesitation sometimes on two on the ball, open something up. The showing help when maybe you don't need to show help. Just those little things open things up. And when you had Kelsey getting downhill like she was in that game, you had Jackie Young being aggressive and taking shots like she was. It was a whole lot of a blend. I credit Seattle for continuing to find a way to fight. Stewart was crazy in the first half. Loyd joined her. Third quarter looked like, uh-oh, they're in trouble. Because mm-hmm. No one else is scoring still. They kept fighting, finding a way. And they were, again, right there until the symphony of shots ended the day. But that was such a fun series. Like, both semifinal series were just so much fun. You dive into the little things. You dive into what each team was trying to do, trying to take away. And, you know, dealing blow after blow and still standing toe-to-toe at the end of it. Trying to deliver one last punch. I mean, that's a tough loss for the Storm. That's a tough loss for the Storm. When you look at the three games they lost and how tight they were, how close they were. That's tough.
And again, like I'm just mad from the Storm. we get the Mystics in round one. We earn home court and get the Mystics. What is this? And you get the Aces series, which features really four close games, in one of which is one of the most insane basketball games in recent memory. that goes to overtime because bless Ezzie's heart, man. Did not contest the Jackie Young shot to send the game into overtime. And then the Aces are like, all right, nah, we're here. We are pressing the turbo button. We're gone. But very fun series. We just got to see greatness in both of these semifinal series. Again, mentioned a little bit earlier, but like the Candace Parker game one, like find those highlights on YouTube. Watch the game, but find those highlights on YouTube at the very least. That's some wild stuff. The game four, Breonna Stewart, what she was able to do wasn't enough, but good Lord, the multitude of ways that she got buckets in that game four against the Aces is insane. And Jewel Lloyd, the Aces could not keep her out of the paint. And we know what she can do as a tough shot maker, but when she's getting downhill to that degree and just basically living in the paint, living at the free throw line, like that was the first Jewel Lloyd game of the series that the Aces survived. Because remember the game one, she pretty much slammed the door. And the production just kind of waxed and waned from there. She came through big in the game four, but again, it wasn't enough. Like Stewie and Jewel Lloyd were really the only two giving the Storm consistent offensive production. And so, I don't know. I was just impressed with what I saw. This was fun. We got the top four seeds battling out in the semis. And that leads us into a finals matchup between the Aces and the Sun. What are your initial thoughts on this series? What are the things that you're looking forward to in this one?
Huh? Oh, you asked for my initial thoughts. Mike Prada had a good point on the Bird app. And he mentioned how Ace to Sun is kind of a styles make fights type matchup. And that's where my intrigue lies, especially having watched the buildup to this series so far. This is going to be a different matchup for both of these teams in a different way. And I'm very intrigued to see what the Sun try and do against the Aces. In theory, we've seen just the power of their guard play, whether it's Chelsea Gray, whether it's Kelsey Plum, whether it's Jackie Young during the playoffs, during the regular season. What does it look like against a team that feels more comfortable with the defenders they have to defend them one-on-one, to try and keep them out of the paint? What's it look like when it's not Stuberg guarding Kelsey Plum, it's Heidemann in that matchup? What's it look like when they have more length to potentially throw at Chelsea Gray? When they have more size to throw at Asia Wilson inside? When they're more determined to cut the paint off? What does that look like? And on the other end, it's a big team in Connecticut. How are you going to finish the stop? What are you going to do with the Jonquel post-ups? Are you going to feel as comfortable switching? Who's guarding Duane Bonner? Who's guarding Alyssa Thomas? Who's guarding Bree Jones? Does that cause you to blink? Small lineup you found that worked against the Storm. Can you play it in this series? So that's where my mind goes immediately, because the Aces haven't faced that level of defense, in my opinion. Not that the Storm are an elite team defense, but there were things the Aces could poke at. With the Sun, are there as many things they can poke at? Like, are they gonna double Jonquel? Are they gonna be able to get Asia comfortable like they did in this series? The pillars and the pieces that the Aces have built this run on, can they be taken away in this series? Because mm-hmm. This is a team that is totally 1,000,000% okay with playing in the mud and making this as messy as possible. Are you as comfortable getting down there? Mm-hmm. Those are my initial thoughts. What say you, sir?
I am intrigued with Connecticut's front court, first and foremost, because I think they can dictate this series. And in a positive sense, to your point, like they can bring this down into the mud. Like this is a Connecticut team that led the WNBA in rim rate. They led the WNBA by a wide margin in offensive rebound rate. And so if the Aces aren't careful, the Sun can very much just control the possession battle and can control the pace. In which case, again, the Aces have elite shot making. They can make that work. But they'd have to recognize they would be trying to make that work in a style that the Sun are more comfortable playing with. They are okay with slowing things down and mucking it up. And so I'm curious to see how the front court is able to manage things in the paint on that end. And then defensively, I want to know what the coverage is going to be for Connecticut's front court. Because throughout this series and throughout the regular season series, which the Aces won the regular season series 2-1, should throw that in there. But the Sun, more so than the Storm, I found, were comfortable putting two on the ball and hedging and rotating behind it. They can do that because, one, they have tremendous front court defenders. Jonquel's really good. Alyssa Thomas was a defensive player of the year candidate. So they have the size and also just the skill to pull that off. But they also have a little bit more size behind that and can rotate behind that. But it also goes back into what we were talking about and what you brought up during the game 3 in Aces Storm, where it's like, wait, do you want to put two on the ball against the Aces? Or do you want to simplify things and make them figure it out? And so I do wonder, can those bigs execute enough to where you're not giving the Aces pockets to attack? Because one thing I noted during the game 5 against Chicago with Jonquel hedging out, like, she's open, like the split's there. And if you can't contain that, if you put two on the ball and you can't contain the ball, like, you're just letting the ball handler kind of dictate turns. They're able to get downhill. They're able to find open players. You don't want a situation to where it's Chelsea Gray called for a pick and roll. She's splitting a pick and roll against Jonquel Jones. And now it's Chelsea Gray leading the dance against you when she's already scoring and shooting like this. You don't want to give her those opportunities, period. But you definitely don't want her running hot like this. And so I just wonder, do the Sun kind of stick to their guns in that regard? Or do they go a little bit more conservative and make the Aces beat them?
Conservative. I anticipate we see a lot of drop early.
Okay.
I anticipate we see maybe some switches over trying to navigate. I don't think they'll come out putting two on the ball if they're smart. Let the Aces come to them. Make Asia roll and finish over your bigs. Make the guards deal with the guards navigating those screens. Try and keep everything in front as much as possible. And don't give the Aces empty plays, especially with your defensive personnel. If you have that level of confidence in them, then you should feel more comfortable as opposed to forcing the activity. So I would anticipate they come out drop adjacent, flatter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would do, but I'd just be talking.
You know, quite a bit. That's just kind of what I keyed in. Just watching what the Sun have done this postseason, also just going back through the regular season matchups, it seemed like that was the base they wanted to go with. And again, they have the talent to do so. They're doing it for a reason. I just wonder, like, do they just stick with that? Because, hey, we're really good at this. Let's force them to beat us and then we'll adjust. Or do they just come out flat out, nah, you're not doing this?
I don't think the Sun have any wiggle room to make this an offensive battle. I could be wrong, but I just don't see the purpose unless they feel very confident in their ability to rotate off Stokes. If the Aces play big, I don't see the purpose of why you would open a play up for the Aces and especially show your hand that early, because Becky Hammond's a really good coach.
Yes.
Show her something over and over, she's going to counter it and hurt you time and time again. So we'll see. I mean, it's going to be interesting. Do you think who gets double more, Jonquel or Asia?
My guess would be Jonquel does.
Should the Aces double Jonquel?
I think they can afford to do so, depending on how the Sun space it. Because I think Alyssa Thomas, naturally, she's going to be a help point. So this is going to have to be a series where the Sun, if they're going to post up Jonquel, which, again, Jonquel's good at that. If you're going to do that, you have to do it with some purpose. Make sure Natisha Hydman's making the entry pass. Keep your best shooter one pass away. Make sure Alyssa Thomas is elsewhere, screening elsewhere. Because if they find themselves on the same side or in the same pocket of space, the Aces will absolutely send help. They're going to do so. And so I would imagine Jonquel gets the doubles with Asia. Again, like, depending on what the scheme is, like, I don't know how much opportunities Connecticut is going to have to do that. But beyond that, from a spacing standpoint, this is just a different series. Against Chicago, the Sun can afford to send a little bit of extra pressure. Because, I mean, if the kickouts are going to be Kalia Copper, like, I think you're okay with that. Cordy Vandersloot, who can knock down shots but has a slower release, I think you're okay with that. And you don't want to leave Allie Quigley open, but she did not shoot well in this postseason, much less the series. And so they kind of got away with it. With the Aces, like, I just don't think you have the same wriggle room. And so it'll be on the Aces to space correctly. We've been talking about Kia Stokes when she's in with Asia Wilson and where they're placing her and how they're using her off the ball. That's going to become even more important. And even if you want to zoom out a little bit more to De'Erica Hamby, who played, what, 5-6 minutes over the last two games of the series? And Becky Hammon talked a little bit pregame of game four about how tough it is to kind of integrate De'Erica Hamby right now. They want to get her back into the flow of things, but it's just tough to bring her in that late. I do wonder how much of a role she's going to have in this one. The Aces have been done since Tuesday. Series starts on Sunday. And De'Erica is firmly back. She's not on the injury report or anything like that. So I do wonder, do we see the minutes bump up to 18 or 20 or so? Do you just go back to your regular starting lineup and then bring Kia Stokes in if you feel like, okay, the Jonquel post-ups are doing a lot. We need more size. We'll navigate. But yeah, my guess would be Jonquel. I think the Aces are going to be a little bit more liberal with that than the Sun will.
Okay. Do you anticipate we see the Aces zone in this one?
I think we see a little bit. I think a lot of that's going to be dictated. Again, the Sun are really good at crashing the offensive glass. And so I do worry. It's kind of a tough balance to walk because I don't think the Sun overall have a lot of spacers. So you can afford to kind of go zone and dare them to shoot. And you can kind of alter the Sun's shot profile in that regard. But it's harder to rebound when you're going zone. And the Sun have the size advantage. So depending on who's taking those shots, you may still just have Alyssa Thomas or Jonquel Jones underneath the basket. And if you're kind of stretched out with that zone and now they're getting easier putbacks, what does that really do for you? I don't think we see a lot of zone. I wouldn't be surprised if they sprinkle it in, though.
Do you see it being a little bit tougher for Asia Wilson this series?
A little tougher, maybe. I really want to see the first possession or the first quarter of this series because I want to see what the Sun do in pick and roll. If they do switch more than I anticipate, then yeah, I can see this being tougher because there's just going to be more size for Asia to deal with. But if they're sticking with their base, I do think this is going to be a little bit easier because I think the Sun have done that particular coverage, either hedging or flat out traffic. Like, I think they've done that more frequently than the Storm have this year. And I think that's going to open up more, like even during the regular season series, that's what they were doing. So I could see where Asia would have more open pockets to attack and get the mid-range jumper going. And she's flowing off of that. I really, probably a bad answer, but I really just want to see the first quarter. I want to see what the Sun have in store there.
I got you. More important for their team, Kelsey Plum or Jackie Young?
More important, I would say, I think they're definitely going to need Kelsey in this one. And Kelsey shot the leather off the ball during the regular season series. I think they're going to need the shot making from Kelsey.
Okay. More important for their team, Courtney Williams or DeWanna Bonner?
I think I would go with Courtney Williams in this one. They're going to need the shot making, and also the cutting has to carry over because I do think the Aces are going to identify Courtney as a help off point again in the half court. And so if they are trying to load up and double Jonquel Jones, those opportunities should be there again for Courtney Williams. She's going to have to capitalize on those. And if she's spaced, she's also just going to have to knock down those shots.
Who can swing this series, Kelsey Plum or Courtney Williams? It was a tournament. You didn't even know it.
I see. Always got to be on the lookout for the tricks from you. I'm going to go Kelsey Plum.
It's a big Plum series. I think she's got to win the Heidman matchup if that's the way the Sun go. I think that she has to. And not that she was. It was weird because it's not like she. I didn't feel that she played poorly in the Storm series. It was just a tough go. And the Storm were able to live with a little bit more. She's got to be that pressure point where now it's driving, pull up, pick and roll, off ball, that blend. You got to deal with that package. And you got to deal with Asia. And you got to deal with Chelsea Gray. Mm-hmm. Like if the Aces are able to hit those notes, the series becomes very difficult for the Suns, just because offensively, while they can score, this is a different ball game. This is an Aces team that is going to keep coming. Like, I can make the half-court offense joke. I will.
No, we know.
But once the lid comes off, you're in a different ball game, and you can only stay in the mud so long if they are, you know, starting to dust their clothes off a little bit, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a big plum series. But Sun gonna need that guard play. We know that. Sun gonna need that guard play. And they need their bigs to show up, but they gotta play with purpose offensively. You know. Feeding it to Jonquel is one thing, that's great. But what are you gonna do out of it? Are you gonna move the Aces defense? Are you gonna keep pressure on them? And if you're not scoring, it's going in transition. So who imposes their will first and who's able to show they can survive in the other team's court or style of play is going to be intriguing to me.
I got you. I think we're absolutely going to see the three big lineup from the Sun in this series. Who would be your three bigs for the Aces if they go to it?
I wouldn't go three bigs.
If they can.
I wouldn't match it.
You wouldn't match it? Okay.
Mm-mm. Why? It's not what we do.
That's pretty true. Or at least not generally, it's not what they do. They experiment with it some during the regular season and in that regular season series. But I guess I just wonder, like, how do they plan to go with that size? Do you...
Jackie Young, what up?
Just put Jackie Young on Alyssa Thomas?
I mean, hey, you just guard Brianna Stewart.
That's pretty true. Okay, so I could see that. I was kind of thinking, like, one, just how they match that big lineup, and two, or maybe 1A, like, does Becky go to the bench a little bit more? Do we see a little Ileana Rupiah in the series? Who did some positive things during the regular season series. And I think because the Sun, like, again, they don't have Breonna Stewart. And even just from what the Sun run, it's not a whole bunch of movement and a lot of things to navigate. It may be an easier defensive series from that standpoint. Like, I wonder if there's a pocket for Ileana Rupiah in the series. Especially if the Sun say, okay, you got Kia Stokes in, babe. We're just not guarding her. We're loading up on Asia. Like, I think there may be a little bit more room for Ileana minutes in this one. But you just
maybe. I think Coach Hammond's going to lean on her starters. Mm. We know that. And you're going to get a stint. You're going to get a run. If it's not there, we're going to go for what we got.
All right. I'm trying to think. Is there anything else I am keyed in on this one? This is going to be such a weird series. A lot of talent on the floor. So I'm intrigued.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. I will put you on Front Street then. Who do you have winning the series and how many games?
Dog, it just got announced an hour ago. On Front Street. Well, Aces in four. There you go.
Okay. I just want to see where your head was at. I think I lean Aces in... I kind of want to say Aces in five. Let's say Aces in four.
Copycat.
Oh, brother. I go Aces in four. I do think the offense will be a little much.
Oh, then I need to change my pick to Sun in five just so I can laugh at you for the first 5 minutes of the pod.
Oh, there we go. do you want to land with Sun in five then?
No.
Okay. Let's say we can put that on the record. It's fine.
Put that on the record.
I'm just saying. All righty then. If we have our picks in, we can float into the mailbag. Thank you, everyone who has sent in questions over this last little bit. Again, you don't have to wait for us. If you have questions for us, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Send them yes. in. We will get two of them.
Yes, email them. I do not have the password still. So if you're sending questions to us, please go ahead and ask, why does Steve not have the password? That'll help me out. Thank you. Appreciate that.
I would like to counter. One, I've already given you the password. Two, Steve, how many passwords do you have right now?
You've been well over this. I deleted all my passwords yesterday, trying to fix so we could do a watch party.
That's pretty interesting.
You feel good about that? I have no shame.
No. I don't feel good about it.
I was trying to fix everything, man. A little rain, not the whole Wi-Fi out of order. I was trying to do all the things, turn it off, turn it back on, hit clear, hit the wrong clear. So yeah, I got no passwords. Hope you feel good about that, guys.
I don't feel good about that. I would like for you to have all of the passwords, including the one that I sent you when I made the darn email address, but it's fine.
What's the first question?
First one comes from Jared. Jared says, I've been a loyal listener to the podcast for about a year now and just wanted to say thanks for helping me get engaged more into the W. I was curious how y'all would rank your top five favorite individual performances from the semifinals.
Chelsea Gray. I mean, they're all going to be Ace of Storm. No disrespect to Chicago, Connecticut. But Chelsea Gray had too many insane games. Asia had too many insane games. Stewie had too many insane games.
Unbelievable.
Five of those performances from those three. Pick them out of a hat.
All right. Well, then. The five that I am choosing from, I went Candace Parker's game one, Jewel Lloyd's game one, Chelsea Gray's game three, Asia's game three, and Stewie's game four. Just to offer a little bit of variety. But yeah, I feel like there were more wow performances in Ace of Storm than the other series. I'm with you there. Next one is going to come from Nick. Nick says, as someone who is coming to basketball a little bit later in life, in parentheses, didn't play much growing up, but is interested in learning more about the game, do you think it's more helpful to focus on watching a narrow part of the game to get your bearings with one thing at a time? Are there watching strategies that you like to employ to learn more closely?
I would say just watch and see where your mind asks the most questions or what you enjoy the most, and then go into that portion, if that makes sense. Let the game talk to you. Let your eyes speak to you. Let your mind think for you, but don't go in there saying, hey, I'm only looking at defense, because you're just going to miss a lot of stuff. The game is always going to paint the picture for you. It's always going to tell the story. So go in there, watch it, and let it speak to you how it does. Because everyone sees the game differently. I think the toughest part and the mistake that a lot of people make, whether it's going analysis-wise or scouting-wise, you go into film looking for something. If you go into film looking for something, you're going to miss four or five things. Because your mind is locked in on this one thing. You might be looking for the pick and roll coverage, and that's fine. You might get the answer. You missed all the other reasons why it's happening. You missed all the other things you were trying to do. So just watch the game. See what piques your interest. You may be attracted to the defensive end, maybe fast breaks. It might be off ball actions. You never know what it's going to be. But see what your mind continuously kind of goes back to, what questions you keep asking, what notes you keep taking, or what stands out to you, and then kind of dial into that. And let that kind of grow.
There we go. That's good stuff from Steve. Only thing I'll add to that, like if you do want to go with a narrow focus, I would say pick a team to focus on if you're going to go that route. And so if you are looking for more of a defense focus, then find a team that does a bunch defensively. And so you can kind of zoom in and see like what they're doing. Talked about this elsewhere, but like man, if you're trying to learn defense things, the Raptors do a ton. The Warriors do a ton. The Heat do a ton. Offensively, the Warriors do a ton. Like, they're hone in on a team if you want to go narrow focus. I'm with Steve. Like, maybe don't go into and say, hey, I'm going to look at this specific area. I don't think you go into those focus areas until you already have a base, if that makes sense. I think it makes a little bit more sense if you're looking for something specific. If you feel like there's an area that you've been watching that you don't have a strong feel for, maybe that's when you lock in a little bit more, but to begin, like, just look at everything and see what pops for you. All right. Next one is going to come from Patrick, who asks, how do you both think the media plays a role in star players nowadays requesting trades from their current teams and whether or not this is good for the league?
That's a question for you. Why y'all be doing that?
What you mean, y'all? How does the media play a role? Like, I would say in a very broad sense, because I'm not trying to get in trouble, but in a very broad sense, like the way that I think in a very broad sense, the way that conversations, the way the conversation is kind of shaped when it comes to players, and particularly when it gets into legacy talk, I think there's a lack of appreciation in general for what players are doing. And because of that, it becomes, well, I have to do this thing and I have to find a situation that allows me to do this thing. And so I think that factors in a little bit for players. If all you hear is you need a ring or it doesn't matter what you do, then I think the natural end to that is going to be, all right, well, I'm not about to spend 12 years of my career on Team X if the ceiling is the second round, when I can hit free agency and join this team with a max slot that just won 50 games a year ago. And so, like, I think that more than anything is where things get affected. As far as if it's good for the game, I don't think it's bad for players. I'm fine with like player movement in general. Like, I'm not going to think player movement's a bad thing. I hope that players are moving because they want to move and not because media as a whole isn't conveying how good they are or appreciating them properly. I do think it becomes a quote unquote bad thing if that's the sole reason players are doing what they're doing.
I'm going to go with an unpopular take. You ready?
Oh, this should be good. Okay.
I don't think they play that big of a role. I think it's up to those guys, what they want, what they're looking for, their current situation. Did the team do what they're supposed to do? What's our situation looking like? What's our window looking like? Mm-hmm. Where can I go? Is this right? I don't think media plays that big of a role anymore, because I don't think these guys are looking for that validation anymore. Because nine times out of 10, they're not going to get it.
That's true.
The days of the ring culture and you get a stamp once you get a ring, that didn't change anything. We're still talking about Giannis crazy. Oh, I mean, you got posts and clips talking about he doesn't have a shot making presence after what he did in the finals and what he's done growth wise. So I don't think the media plays the role they think they play in these decisions. I think the teams play more of a role than the media. That window is short. Mm-hmm. You have X amount of time to get us in the direction I think we need to go. If it's not done, I'm out of here because I don't want to be here anymore. Because guess what? The articles are coming. Name a player who hasn't had an article written about him.
Can't.
So, yeah. I'll buy it.
All right.
It's too expensive.
That's a bar. All right. We got two from Rafa, who says, huge fan of the show. I have two questions, a serious one and a fun one. And the serious one is, let's say you have a great pick and roll ball handler and are deciding on what types of pick and roll sets to run. Would you rather have one player that's solid as both a roller and on the pop, or would you rather have two players that specialize in either but are elite at what they do? So one elite roller and one elite shooter on the pop.
Ah, so let's make this more fun.
Oh, this would be good.
So we have Bargnani. We have Capella and we have Ryan Anderson. Which one do I want?
Oh, goodness.
changes the scope of the question a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In theory, on paper, if you're in a coach's meeting in a coaching room, you want the one that's solid at both, because we can run anything we want. You don't know what's coming. We got the pop. We got the roll. We can mix it up. We do all sorts of things. Problem becomes, if the defense is fine, like, fine, shoot it. Well, there goes the element of surprise at the pop. And that means when we roll, they're waiting on us. So that might go out the window. If we have an elite roller, that's fantastic. But what do we do when they drop? Because guess what you're rolling into, bud?
Help.
Your man. You're rolling into your man. And then the elite shooter on the pop, you can't roll. So I'm going to switch. Which is why I came back to... Actually, no, let's make it more fun.
Oh, no.
Let's go Bargnani, Gobert, or Ryan Anderson.
You couldn't help yourself, huh?
Nope. Sure couldn't. Give me the versatility. I'll still go with the versatility. all jokes aside, give me the one that can do both. I got some manipulation I can do, even though there's some counters. It's tough to not go with an elite roller, but give me the person who can do both. I can mix and match, keep you off balance.
Rudy Gobert. Also, the post up against Dennis Schroeder. Anyway, I'd say give me the one that can do both, because ultimately, like, if you're going late game, I would like to know first and foremost. We have a good pick and roll.
No additional details. No added context. Answer the question. There will be no Euro stepping.
How does that count as a Euro step? I want to know what type of ball handler I have.
No, like, Mr. Morale and the Euro steppers. You have whichever ideal ball handler you want. Answer the man's question.
Jeez, why am I getting yelled at for wanting context? This is amazing. Anyway, give me the guy that I can do both with. Empty a corner at the end of the game. Keep the defense off balance. We'll go with that since Steve is yelling at me. The fun question. You have to play one-on-one for $1 million. Which player would you pick as your opponent? George Marison or Muggsy Bogues? I feel like most of us normal-sized people would be quick enough to get by Marison, but he's 7'7", so it won't matter. On the other hand, for Muggsy to have been as good as of an NBA player as he was at 5'3", any height advantage you would have wouldn't matter either, because he'd steal the ball as soon as you show the ball.
This is for a Millie?
Yes.
I would have to go Muggsy Bogues. And it'd be a tough matchup. Mm-hmm. But I'm not playing a 7'7 person for $1 million. I'm not about to get my shot blocked once and then just have to deal with a super tall person for the remainder of the points. Because that's the worst way you could lose $1 million in a one-on-one game. What are you supposed to do? I'm just fouling the whole time until he misses. That's horrific. No. Let me play Muggsy. We can actually play. It'd be tough. It'd be hard to guard him. He's strong too. So yeah. It's not like you just get the automatic back downs, but at least I can, you know, face up for my triple threat. A couple bad downs, get to a fadeaway. I know there's a shot I can get to. Mm-hmm. I make one mistake against George, it's over.
That's kind of tough. That was my thinking. Because, like, I initially was like, maybe you could drive by him, but also, like, the wingspan and stuff, like, you probably just wouldn't get a shot off. And, like, with Muggsy, like, you could get a shot off at the very least. Again, you're probably not facing up and trying to drive by Muggsy because, again, the quick hands. But, like, you could probably get a turnaround off at the very least. You could get a jumper off against him. You don't think you get a jumper off against George unless you're bombing from, like, 40. He just doesn't want to guard you.
I mean, there's more strategy with George. I probably feel better about my chances. I mean, there's a good chance he might play back. I get a couple of pull-ups. Maybe he comes out. Maybe get a drive. Try and wear him out. There's things you could do. I can't get past the frustration of not being able to defend this tall man. There's not a 5-second back down rule. Mm-hmm. And he starts with the ball. So it's not like I can front him or push him out of the post. That would frustrate me to no end. Sorry.
I think that's fair. All right. Well, then, last one's going to come from Steven, who says, based off of last season in totality, rank these 5 screen navigators both on and off the ball, please. The 5 players that we have are Davion Mitchell, Marcus Smart, Mikal Bridges, Alex Caruso, and Derek White.
Oh, this is an evil question. There's no way to not disrespect someone. Number 5 is Davion Mitchell.
Okay.
Number 4 is Derek White. Number 3 is Alex Caruso. Number 2 is Mikal Bridges. Number 1 is Marcus Smart.
All right.
But it'd probably be 1A, 1B, 1C. If I could add my context to it, you know?
Yeah, I feel you. Once again, no Herb Jones. I'm upset. No, I'm just kidding. But I would say my 5... I think my 5, I would go Caruso, Smart, Bridges, Mitchell and White. I think that would be my order that I don't feel super great about, but I think that would be my order. While we're on screen navigation, can I please rant about the Herb Jones 2K rating?
What's there to rant about?
Why is he a why does he have a 79 perimeter defense rating?
Because those are the numbers they put into the computer.
What's wrong with their computer?
It has Herb Jones as a 79 rated perimeter defender.
That's awful. That is all. Like, what numbers are being put in if Herb Jones is a 70? Herb Jones and Ja Morant should not be equivalent perimeter defenders. I'm sorry. There is no formula. There should be no coherent formula that exists that has those two as equal defenders. That's just not how that works.
Chris Paul's a 90.
Yeah, and that's bad. That's awful too. It's been
Al Scruso's 89.
Like, and everyone who listens to this podcast knows how I feel about Chris Paul. Chris Paul is not a better defender. He's not a better perimeter defender than Al Scruso. He's not a better perimeter defender than Herb Jones. Like, that's just not, and he shouldn't be at this stage of his career, but he's just not.
So Herb Jones is a 79. This is accurate. Is this the new one?
Yes.
What was he last year? Do you remember? Do you know?
Herb Jones, I mean, it was the rookie. I think he ended it like, I'd have to look and see what his 2K22 rating was at the end of the year.
It wasn't 79? I'm doing the Googles right now because I don't know if this is accurate. Bam Adebayo's perimeter defense is a 79. Donovan Mitchell is a 79. Let's see what we got here. PJ Tucker's an 80. Will Barton's an 80. Cam Reddish is an 81.
Like, come on,
Dante DiVincenzo is an 82. Devin Vassell is an 82. RJ Barrett's an 82. Mike Conley's an 83. Don't say a word. Gary Harris is an 84. So we got Danny Green's an 85. Dylan Brooks is an 85. Jonathan Isaac is 86. I don't think that's right. Yeah, he's down there, man.
It just doesn't make sense to me. I am terrified to see what these W ratings are going to be. I know I'm going to be upset.
What started with the anger towards the 2K ratings? And why are you as mad as Klay Thompson?
I feel Klay on this one. But no, like, I just think if you can even call it a basketball simulation at this point. But at any rate, if you are talking about how authentic your game is in terms of the signature styles and the dribbles and the shot innovations, all this good stuff, you want the players to be true to form, you should have the ratings true to form. And if your ratings have that wide of a discrepancy, what are we doing? Again, what is the formula that has Herb Jones as a 79 and present day Chris Paul as a 90? Like, that's a thing that has to be explained to me.
Do you salute 2K for putting Klay Thompson at an 88 with everyone else that was at the top that wasn't Steph Curry? And you think he was just mad because he wasn't a 90 in three-point shooting?
I think he feels like the rating's too low. Because didn't he end up posting, like, a screenshot of, like, the three-point record and stuff?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I think he very much feels like if Steph's a 99, he'd be like a 97 or something.
Understandable. Karl-Anthony Towns an 86. I'm sure he was upset about that. Mike Muscala also an 86. Corey Joseph also an 86. PJ Tucker an 85. Zeke Nagy an 85.
All right.
Josh Richardson an 85. Keldon Johnson an 84.
Huh. And the other thing that bothers me about the shooting stats, like, why do we get away from separating the types of shooting? Why is there 1 3-point rating again? We should have spot up and movement ratings.
Simplify it.
You're 2K, you're a multi-billion dollar company. Like, if there is a basketball game that should put in the work to do this, it should be this one.
That is Nekias Duncan speaking.
you quite literally have the resources to do it.
You got to stop for my game stuff download.
I just, like, honestly, we should have three. We should have movement off the dribble and spot ups is what we should have for all three of the things. But whatever. At any rate, we should have movement and spot up ratings for the shooting stuff. That's the thing that should be implemented. Like, they have the resources to do that. We should do that. But also, disrespect Herb Jones.
Would you trade better ratings for servers?
No, I wouldn't.
Ah, there you go. Put some respect on their name.
But even this, okay, fine. Just, okay. Are you proud of that?
Extremely.
Unbelievable. Do you have closing thoughts?
Do I have closing thoughts?
Yes.
Any thoughts on the Westbrook Patrick Beverly Dap exchange photos?
Hashtag Dap Watch. Yeah. It wasn't super convincing, but I'm glad they're dapping each other up at least.
Okay. Do you have any closing thoughts, man?
Happy 2K day. And really? I am ready for the finals.
Really?
Yeah. I am excited to play the game, but the ratings annoy me. I don't think that's mutually exclusive. Happy 2K.
What do you think? What do you think about? So I'm just scrolling right now because I didn't really have any free throws because that game kind of threw me off. Rival executives and scouts say that Westbrook and the Lakers would be best served if he led their second unit. Why do we keep asking anonymous scouts what their opinion is?
Like, who are these? I mean, they're anonymous. So, but like, who are these anonymous scouts?
Well, why do we value this at such a high level?
Well, you know, the scout gives you credibility, you see.
Why?
You don't know. If you're in the league. I mean, I guess that's the thinking behind it.
Because you get a title? I'm asking.
I think that's it, yeah.
That makes you smart at basketball.
I think that's the implication. I am simply answering your question. So I know what you're getting at, but like, I think the thinking is like, okay, this is a person in the league and they wouldn't be in the league if they didn't have a certain knowledge base and therefore their analysis.
No, that ain't true. You're going to trigger me. Go ahead, take us out.
What is that?
Get us out of here. Get us out of here. Is my game downloaded?
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NekiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week with Game 1 takeaways.
Beans.